Game On 2FM with Green Firm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Firm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Well, it's Monday the 26th of October. It's meant to be a bank holiday, but nobody knows if it is in these strange times. But it is a weekday and it's just after 6 o'clock. So this is Game On.
Coming up today, the Six Nations is back and we get the thoughts of Liam Toland and Lynn Cantwell.
Available here for Conor Murray, moves it back and field towards Caelan Doris. Caelan Doris now forward with that one, Dave Heflin there too. They're unable to stop Caelan Doris, he's 5 yards short of the line. Murray moves it away quickly, back to Sexton, the captain. Sexton smashes his way through, touches it down.
They said it couldn't happen, but the 2020 All-Ireland Hurling Championships are underway. We get reaction from Shane McGrath.
I think we're just all glad to get back into the realm of it again. And obviously we've loads of things we need to improve on for next week. It's only a quick turnaround now for us. 7 days to Tipperary here in Cork next weekend. So another massive challenge for us. You know, we know where we're at. We know what we need to work on. So we'll hopefully do that over the next couple of days.
In football, the league has concluded after a dramatic weekend. And we ask Vinnie Corry who's best prepared for the championship ahead.
From our perspective, there's another 2 weeks. So look, you'd hope that we can stay healthy and that everybody else stays healthy. And hopefully we'll have a championship because I think the championship is required. That's important because that lifts the mood.
And Stephen Kelly talks soccer as the top of the English Premier League table looks like it was back in 1984.
Rodrigo, touchdown and Bamford's there! Leeds United have the lead. Here's Bamford. Bamford's shot. Oh, brilliant! Bamford still. Oh, he's done it! Patrick Bamford has done it! It's a magnificent hat-trick!
Game on 2FM.
You can get in touch by texting us on 51552 or tweeting at GameOn2FM. Now, every Monday, we talk about our sporting highlights. And I have to say that this weekend didn't get off to a great start for me. I was so excited about the Republic of Ireland and women's team playing the Ukraine on Friday afternoon. And unfortunately, it just didn't go their way. And I couldn't remember actually beforehand when I more wanted a team to win. I really want this team to get to a major tournament. It feels like a really missed opportunity for them, but they will know that more than anybody else.
They will, Marie, but I tell you what I thought watching it after the game was to see the emotion in each and every one of them, how much it went, how disappointed it meant. And to me, to see the, I've often experienced it, but to see them show how hurt they were, to me shows that they'll be back and they'll get it because they want it so much. It was so evident.
See, the thing about it, Ruby, is it's really difficult because they've been on the road, a lot of them, for a very long time. Now, there are a huge amount of young players coming up as well, and it's brilliant. But that team signifies change in women's football. They're the ones that stood down on the keys and fought for their just basic terms and conditions, and they're the ones that have put the work in, and they're the ones that are going to change the way women's football is treated in the country. And I think that's why it hurts so much, because everybody that has been following them knows what they have put in, and it's not just on the pitch, what they sacrificed off the pitch as well to even be in a place where they have, where they're in contention for qualifying for major tournaments, is like, it's a momentous achievement. So I think everybody just really wants them to get there because of what they put in. And you know, as time goes on, unfortunately some of them, especially the ones that are, you know, were in that picture in Liberty Hall, they're not going to be around. Now look, it'll be brilliant when they do get there, and everybody believes that an Irish team will get there eventually, but I think it would just be so nice for them to get there. Now, it's not done yet. They do have another chance, and look, who knows, maybe I'll be taking all this back in a few weeks' time, and I really hope that I will. But look, the weekend didn't get off to a great start. It picked up a little bit on Saturday when Liverpool won, but it was very, very nervy watching. I can't say that I enjoyed it. And then it went downhill again yesterday when the Clare Hurlers lost. So really, I don't have a major sporting highlight. If someone else wants to take over, work away.
Go on, Donica, you surely have a highlight.
The rugby was the highlight for me, Ruby. It was just a brilliant weekend of rugby. I know Marie will be sick, and there was two things that are important to you didn't go your way, but just in terms of rugby, I thought it just was a brilliant weekend. And we're going to be chatting to Liam Toland and Lynn Cantwell shortly, and we'll go through all the important bits of that. But my highlight is probably something kind of off the pitch. There was two for me, really. There was the French women deciding that they'll travel to play Ireland in Ireland, because they're a professional team. They don't need to quarantine, and they decided that you know, it's the Irish team full of amateurs that need to go into work the next time. They thought it was right that they travelled to play Ireland next weekend. So I think that was just an incredible... When we see so much going on in sport at the moment, I just thought it was a brilliant gesture and a really nice thing for them to do. And the other one for me was Dan Levy returning after 18 months. I was covering the game with Tommy Bowen. We saw his injury 18 months ago, and I remember we were nearly pleading with the producer not to show it again on the screen, just praying that his family wouldn't see it. And at the time, we were worried with the guy walk again, and to see him come on and put in a massive display, and he was unlucky. TMO decision kind of denied him the fairy tale end. So that was my kind of sporting highlight.
He said afterwards that his knee felt perfect. Look, Ruby, you're the injury expert. Can body parts feel perfect after such a long layoff and such a horrific injury?
Of course they can. And once you have the mental strength to convince yourself that it's perfect, anything is possible, Marie. If you want to lie down and say that it's not the same, but if you have the mental power to convince yourself that it's 100%, you'll do it. A lot of stuff is between your ears.
I loved the way he chatted about it, though, Ruby, and you've probably done the same. He just honestly broke it into little blocks. What am I doing in 3 months? What am I trying to get right this week? And just, that's the way he...
But that's all you can do in anything, Dunica, is focus on what's going forward. You can't keep looking backwards. He can't go back to when just before the injury. It's all about, how do I get back? And it's moving on and moving forward. If we all looked back, we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning.
If we all looked back, we'd be thinking about playing that Mourinho clip when I was supposed to play the sting at the top of the show.
Don't worry.
Yeah, God, it's up for sure. Look, we didn't pick you up on it. You had to pick yourself up on it.
We've moved on.
We get it with Stephen Kelly. Ruby, what was your highlight?
My highlight was Kevin Manning in Doncaster on Saturday. I think when you look at the future and talk about moving forward and moving on, 53 years of age, out he goes on Max Sweeney in the Group 1 Futurity Stakes on Saturday, trained by Jim Bulger, and wins the Group 1. I just think it's an incredible longevity, but incredible hunger, dedication, application at 53 years of age to still want it, still be able to do it at the top level in professional sport. I think it's incredible.
Hold on, 53.
He's 53, and he would have struggled every day of his life with his weight. I mean, to look at him now, he is the fittest, leanest jockey in the world. I'm still, I know him, I have been out with him, I know him quite a long time, but I just his dedication, his attitude is incredible. And there's a bit of not so much a fairy tale to the story, but obviously the horse was named after Terence McSweeney, who was 100 years dead on Sunday. The horse goes and wins a Group 1 on Saturday. So there was a bit of, I don't know, history to it too. Jim Bulger bred the horse, named the horse, and he goes and wins the day before Terence McSweeney's anniversary. So, but Kevin Manning was the highlight. I think at 53, he is an advert to anybody as to what you are capable of doing if you put your mind to it.
Right, well, Ruby's on a very positive buzz this morning, or this evening, so we're going to just...
My God, look, just your phone wasn't working all day, you still think it's morning.
She threw it off the wall when Claire lost. I know what happened there.
I'm trying to get back on track without a phone for the day. It was difficult. Well, I have to say, it was a very, very busy weekend, and it is brilliant to be talking about competitive sport, and especially competition, I think, within places or within teams is brilliant to have that again. And Peter Armani was out speaking to the media today after the weekend's game, and he's relishing the battle of trying to get back in to the starting lineup for Ireland's Six Nations decider against France.
There's a massive emphasis put on our bench to come on and not just roll in, but to make a difference, you know what I mean? There's guys out there who've been out there for whatever, 55, 60, 65 minutes, and you've got to make a difference and be different when you come on. And, you know, that's the pressure we put on ourselves. I wouldn't say it's frustrating, you know what I mean? Certainly competitively, I want to play every game, I want to start every match. That's just the way we all are as a group. But I think we understand that, you know, team comes first, and you've got to be best prepared to play 79 minutes or 80 minutes or 15, doesn't matter what you get, you've got to be ready to go. You know, when I first started, you look at the back row that was there, and every single weekend you look at the back rows that I was involved with, and now the back row at the moment, it's never been anything but probably the most competitive position on the pitch. So we're in a battle every week to get a jersey, not a mind to start. So I have to say I'm hugely enjoying it and learning from it. You know, the performance from the starting back row at the weekend was, I thought, second to none, you know what I mean? I thought their energy, their moments in the game, the amount of work they got through was incredible. You know, from a team point of view, you know, you couldn't be prouder of the way the team worked at the weekend, and particularly the back row.
Okay, to mull over a fantastic weekend of rugby, we're delighted to be joined by Ireland's most capped player, Liam Cantwell, and from Thomond Park before tonight's Munster versus Cardiff game, Liam Toland. Guys, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Good stuff. Liam, I'll start with you. It was a brilliant weekend, getting two wins, the men's and the women's. What if we talk about highlights, what was your highlight of the weekend in terms of rugby in those fixtures?
Oh, geez, that's a tough one, isn't it? Look, I'll go with the women, but I think it was just the return of Claire Malloy, probably, and I know she's not her player of the match, and that was, like, a fair objective award, to be fair. But I think her return, and it matched with Ireland playing well and hopefully in good form as they try to qualify for the World Cup. So that'll be my highlight for the weekend.
You mentioned her there, and Liam, you know how important back rowers are. Just to come back in and to be up to that pace, though, is incredible. But I was really impressed with Dorothy Wall. We've heard an awful lot about her. Totally, what an incredible performance by a 20-year-old.
Well, you know what was even made it better was because Italy played some great rugby in Donnybrook. They played some really good passages of play, and Ireland stayed true to their form. But I think, as Lynn mentioned, Claire Malloy for me was absolutely outstanding. But there was a quality across the park in many ways, and it was a complete contrast. Like, certainly in that opening 20 minutes, 30 minutes, it was all Italy in many aspects of it. They're certainly playing a brand of rugby, but they weren't getting the rewards, and that shows a lot of clever, greater experience maybe in a lot of new players that have joined the side in Donnybrook. But I was very impressed with the Irish back row, and again, like, you can't give too many plaudits to Claire Malloy.
Yeah, just on that, Lynn, Hannah Tyrrell playing at 10, and we know she's a fantastic talent, but this is a new position for. We saw Sini Nupo going in and playing first pair of hands. Is that something you could see us doing in the future as we're going on, maybe a bit like England with Mike Catt and Johnny Wilkinson?
Yeah, look, I think it would be ideal, because I think Sini's well able to be there. And if anything, I'd probably say that she's the strongest decision maker and game manager in the back line. It's just that she's not a kicker. And Hannah is an excellent kicker and excellent football. I think what she just doesn't have is game management, because she's relatively new to the 15th game. So the combination of the two is great. I think he'd probably stick with Hannah over the next couple of games, because obviously the World Cup qualifiers are the key, and she is strong there, but she'll obviously have an awful lot to learn. But one thing to mention there, I think Kieran Hallis, who's the defensive coach that has come in this year, he's ex-Exeter and Leinster, I think, and he's done really Trojan work defensively, but I think he's starting to have some input into the halfbacks in particular, which is where I think Ireland need a lot of work. So Hannah's in a good position there to be learning her trade as quick as possible. So hopefully we'll see that in the next game.
Lynn, Adam Griggs mentioned afterwards that game management that you mentioned there as well. How difficult will it be for them to improve on something which is so crucial in such a short space of time?
Oh, look, it's very, very tough, but it's necessary. I think it's a lot of off-field stuff, and I know this might sound crazy to suggest that you're learning the game, but, you know, there'll be an element that a lot of girls are still learning the game, so you have to do it off field, and as well as the fact that you haven't got test experience or test time out of you have to do that in training, and obviously just on video analysis. But I think there's been a couple of things that I just think Ireland have been an awful lot more focused and specific in their preparation over the last year. Orla Curran has come in as S&C, and you can see that when they scored those two tries, Lindsay's and Claire Malloy's, in the first half, that 20 minutes at the second end of the first half, their fitness was just sublime, and Italy just completely they couldn't match it. So I think the Ireland of the last 2 years weren't fit, and therefore couldn't make good decisions, and it was all just a little bit messy. I think hopefully that's gone, and that should hopefully facilitate just better decisions. And then, as I said, all of the kind of rugby knowledge, they just have to literally get their noses in the books and try their best to accelerate their learning as quick as possible.
Lynn, I totally agree with you. When you see Lindsay Pete running around at 39 years of age, looking fresh as a flea with a few minutes ago, it certainly summed it up. But Liam, if we were to look at the men's game, and we heard Peter O'Malley speaking there about the impact from the bench, and he certainly made an incredible impact with a brilliant bit of skill. Is this what we're expecting to see under Andy Farrell?
Do you know what? It's interesting, Dunnock. I thought it was a great game. I really enjoyed it. And it's how you frame, I suppose, the performance. Do you frame it with one eye in Paris, because that's a monumental challenge for this team? Or do you frame it in the 7 months or the 8 months of COVID and you think, gee, does this team really perform considering the new faces and that? And then the bench really impacted as well. So I think there's an awful lot of interesting things happened. For a start, like the back row, they had, you know, 44 caps to start with, 42 of them were CJ Stander. And if you look at his performance, I think the new shape of the kind of 1-3-2-2, the forwards across the pitch, and Peter Mahoney, he has the skills, but the structure that CJ Stander, like his, he carried 21 times, got 106 yards or 106 metres. Now, two seasons ago, it was the other way around. It was 106 carries for 20 odd metres. So he's in an area of the pitch that he can actually get a bit more space and be more destructive, because he's a brilliant player and he's a brilliant ball carrier. But out against backs, he's going to even be better. So there's a sense of freedom about what they're doing, and that was seen in the lack of kicking. So their kicking game, the box kick, they switched to a more... they were trying to expose grass and they're trying to expose space, and they weren't necessarily going for the traditional box kicks. So there's an awful lot of subtle differences that have happened. Now, again, it's all how you frame it. Do you frame it against a bad Italian side? I think we should look at this in huge positives. I think the breakdown was really, really impressive. I think Porter was just like, how would you shift that guy off a ball if he's on it? He's impossible. And the Irish back row were equally as powerful as well. And a real moment in time is when Darris got that steal under the Irish post that led to the Keenan try. The fact that Darris didn't take contact under his post after getting the steal, he offloaded, didn't need to Aki, tells me that there's a subtle difference in how the management want their players to use the ball. Yes, controlling the ball is important, but there were mistakes, there were errors, there were turnovers, and there were sloppy passes from time to time. But the fact that Darris made the steal and looked to pass the ball before contact in his own 22 tells me that there's a new fresh air of how they're playing rugby. And Peter Romani was kind of bookended it well, didn't he?
Liam, all those sloppy things are mistakes that can be rectified, and we did play with great width, but we played with quite static across the back. Often when it went from Sexton to Aki to Henshaw, they all took the ball standing still. That won't do against France. They're going to be on top of you. There needs to be a bit more pace to it, no?
Well, I think, Ruby, you're right. A lot of things that happen on Saturday won't do against France, because historically we've always struggled, haven't we? So I think that's how you need to frame the fixture. You go, like, you've got to take all the positives, and I think you've got to reiterate the positives as well, because it's a huge task going to Paris at the weekend. But you're 100% right. How the Irish back line are running, and we know Gary Ringrose is going to be out, so that's going to be another kind of cabinet reshuffle as well. And you think, well, will Hugo Keenan make that start? Is Keith Earls going to get back in? Is Stock, for me, I think Hugo Keenan is about one of the most exciting young players I've seen come into the game, and he reminds me a little like Doug Howlett of old. Like, he has all the skills, and I think he could end up playing at full back. But you're right, how to get the absolute maximum out of the ball when you know that the French defence, particularly with the famed defensive coach they have, is going to be brutal, much more so than Italy. So you're 100% right. Accuracy and the skills of the accuracy under that pressure is going to have to improve, certainly.
And Jacob Stockdale, a full back, he was brilliant on the attack, but defensively, was he as strong as he could have been? He dropped one high ball, he could forgive anybody one mistake, but even for a few of the line breaks that Italy made, there didn't seem to be a full back.
Yeah, again, I think a little like Peter Romani was saying there, that the battle of the back row is so intense. A player who's a Lions test captain in Peter Mahoney is concerned about his position. I think the back three, with the likes of James Lowe soon to come in, Hugo Keenan, as we've mentioned, Keith Earls as well, Conway, like Jacob Stack, they definitely are giving him the opportunity to play, and I think his confidence is coming back into it. And I think with the coach's instruction, I think he shall improve. But the competition for that 15 slot is going to prove very difficult. So I'd imagine he won't have a huge amount of time there. But I think he'll get another run at 15. But as I said, I'm nailing my colours to the mast. I think Keenan is ultimately a super 15.
Okay, very good. Sorry, Lynn, just wondering, your best place to chat about Gary Ringrose, obviously best player in the country over the last year. How important, like losing him, I know people will say we've brilliant competition for those places, but when there's a player in form like him, he is a loss. We can bring in Chris Farr, Robbie Henshaw, Bundyaki. There is options, but how much of a loss is Ringrose?
Yeah, look, he is, and I know these are consummate professionals, and they'll just get on like as they need to. But he is just such a wonderful player. He's a pivotal player. He's just exceptional how much leadership he shows through his play beyond his years, and getting the experience under his belt as captain earlier on in the year, I think was a good move. So I think that he will be missed, and they need him against France, because France obviously can be so slippery in that they don't know what they're doing half the time. So you have to be really, really on your toes, and obviously that's one of his strengths. He's just so reactive, in particularly his defence, obviously, and his ability to do anything in attack, depending on what the defence do, is his strength. So yes, he will be missed. Like anything, it's an opportunity for others to come in, and it's not they're not fresh players that are coming in. So fingers crossed they'll be able to gel as quick as possible.
Lynn, there was brilliant debuts for Will Connor's man of the match. James Gibson-Parks came on and added tempo. Ed Byrne as well was incredible. But Liam mentioned Hugo Keane, and just he should have had a hat-trick on debut.
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful. Do you know what? It's a theme, though, isn't it? You know, it's Stockley when he came on the scene. Yeah, and again, it was just brilliant service by Henshaw, the kick through by Sexton. Like every winger should applaud the players within them, but like he's just electric. He's just unknown. He's unpredictable, and that's a threat that you don't want to have be defending against on the wing. So look, the world is his oyster, to be fair. So I'd say just utilise that as much as possible, because he'll be man marked fairly soon.
Tonica, James Ryan is probably Paul O'Connell, so Ian Henderson was kind of more you, but Tadhg Byrne was in there this weekend and he had a fabulous game. Could he have cemented his place?
He was incredible. I think, Liam, you'd agree with it. These new interpretations to the breakdown are making it really good for back rows, and we'd call Tadhg Byrne a 5.5. He's kind of more of a back row than the second row, but can get through in a mountain of work. And when you look at that back row himself, Will Connors, Caelan Doris, for me, didn't get an awful lot of credit, but he's probably one of these guys, if you look back at the stats, they were through the roof. And I found it really interesting for the Hugo Keane and disallowed try in the TMO. It's a big one that they ref in England. Saracens brought in this thing, what they used to call, Ruby, bookmarking defences. So instead of blocking someone, they would create space. So two of us would make a gap for Marie to run through and block Lynn and Liam from defending. So really, really smart. But you probably get away with it from any other reffing setup bar the English. But I'd be interested in your take on that, Tony. Just, you know, Tadhg Byrne, just how effective he is. He was brilliant even before these new interpretations of the rules. Now he's incredible.
Yeah, I think, you know what, Donica, I think he is the benefit of the change of coach. I just got a sense that under Joe Smith, that the fact that he's a 5.5 or a 6.5, whatever you want to call it, like, I got a sense that Joe Smith wants his second rows to commit to being in the exact position constantly. And the challenge for Tadhg Byrne is that he's hunting for breakdown turnovers. And in that sense, he's not necessarily putting himself in the exact position to be filling a pattern, and he doesn't quite adhere to the pattern. And I think modern rugby, I suppose one of the biggest changes that's happened in the last, say, 5-10 years is the power game that has come into it, and the lack of kind of continuity. Like, there's still only 35 minutes or so of international rugby being played, even though the games are going on for way longer than they would have. So there's a lot of stop starts that favours the power athlete. But I think one of the things you'll see in Ireland is the Irish back row kind of have to be hybrids of backs. The kind of centres are doing back row and back row doing centre. And that's what was so brilliant about Peter Mahoney. The fact, in that moment in time, he looked like a centre fixing two defenders and then offloading out the back door, which is absolutely fantastic. Tadhg Byrne is a player who can play second row and back row. I think he's got a huge value, but it's really down to what the coach wants. Does a coach want, like, a South African bruiser, or does he want a guy who can float around a bit? And I think that's the challenge for Tadhg Byrne, is what exact style of rugby. And that is purely, and you know this more than anything, Dunica, you know, yourself and Eddie O'Sullivan, yourself and all the coaches you've been under, like, what is the coach telling him? And I think this one has a bit more tolerance for Tadhg Byrne's play, and I think we will benefit because his skill set is so brilliant, isn't it?
Okay, well, that's something that we're definitely going to be keeping an eye out for next time round. Lynn, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us. But we're going to hang on to you for a second, Liam, because I wanted to chat to you about Miles Farrion. I think anyone that's been a rugby fan for the last few decades anyway will know Mike Lynch, former very famous AIL player. Don't you think that would be fair enough?
Yeah, one AIL, Young Munsters would be usually regarded within the game. I was lucky enough to play against him with Conn over the years, and Liam will know him really well.
Yeah, he was on to me about Reen O'Halloran, a young student in St Clement's College where Mike teaches, and he's got a massive battle ahead. Tell us about it, Liam.
Yeah, well, first of all, for Mike Lynch, was very unlucky. He was on the bench for Ireland against England a number of years back, and was very unlucky not to get a run out back in the old days. But yeah, he's a legend, and not just him, but Tim Crow, the mother of Marie Crow, also had a hand in our upbringing in St Clemens. But I suppose over the weekend, Marie, as elite rugby was going on, I was just thinking of the community and how COVID has impacted the community in so many ways. But there's an amazing initiative for a young lad called Rian O'Halloran. He's a 15-year-old. He should be in TUI with his class, but he's been out sick because of a bone cancer, osteosarcoma. And the family are trying to update their house in order to allow him the best chance to engage in home living because of his illness. But he was a back row forward. He played with St Clemens and St Mary's Rugby Club, actually, here in Limerick. Would be famous of Brendan Foley and very linked to Anthony Foley in that, and Shelburne Soccer Club. So it's a pretty simple concept. There's a teacher called Mr Dave Tidswell who's running a mile an hour for 24. So it's kind of the speed of Donegal O'Callaghan at his max. 1 mile an hour for 24 miles. But it's a brilliant, brilliant concept. And already the kind of the alma mater of St. Clement's is rowing in behind it. But if you can Google Miles Farrion, R-I-A-N, you'll see it and you can get donating. But they've about 27,000 of 50,000 already collected. So it's a brilliant cause, and it reminds us the importance of the community.
Absolutely. Liam Toland, thanks so much for joining us. And we've actually already shared that on the game on Twitter page as well. So it's Miles Farrion O'Halloran, and unfortunately Farrion, he is battling cancer at the moment, and he's already had to have his leg amputated. So they need to sort out the house for him so that he can get around well. And he was an avid sportsman, and we wish him all the best.
On 2FM.
Welcome back. That was quick.
Quick as Harvey Norman.
Yeah, get back in the game, lads. Come on, that was
You're on the ball today, Marie. You're on the ball today. You're so want to talk about Clare Hurling. It's incredible, isn't it?
It is time. It is time. Hurling Championships is back. I have to say, over the weekend, it did kind of feel like all was right in the world. We're back watching hurling. Shane McGrath is going to join us, and then Clare lost. So it was
Limerick hammered Clare, and you were hoping you could go back a week in time.
Yeah, it wasn't great now, but look, it's there's a lot to it, I think, as well. And there is a lot to talk about. Shane, how are you?
I'm great, Marie. Still here, so yeah. It's all good, you know.
Great to have you back. Look, I don't even know where to start, but I think we probably can't really get going.
Well, we know where we're going to start. We're going to start with Limerick.
We're going to start with the 59 points that were scored between the two teams. A new Munster Championship record. Now, usually when we're talking about setting records, Shane, it's always a good thing. But this time, people aren't so sure if high-scoring hurling games are a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I definitely think that the empty stadiums is having a factor in this, Marie. You know, like you take lads there, like Ruby and Dunic as well. Like when there's a massive crowd there, the adrenaline is going. There's obviously going to be more nerves. You know, and mistakes can happen as well because of that, because of the crowd and the atmosphere they generate. But like, you don't have that now, so you don't really, you have less nerves, and maybe there's less mistakes been made. And I think you can back it up with stats as well. Like, I was looking at a guy, Kevin O'Brien, on Twitter there. Like, in the same match last year, Dublin Leash, there was 46 scores, right? Big crowd down to Portiche. This year, there was 56 scores. Okay, you can say, right, okay. You know, a different year and all this. But even in the Limerick and Clare match, and Limerick had a big win last year, like, I mean, there was 42 scores in that match in the Gaelic Grounds with a crowd. There were 62 scores in the match yesterday with no crowd. So I think the crowd is having an effect on it. Some people say, oh, the crowd can be worth it, 2 or 3 points. It can be, but I think the crowd, the no crowd, the no atmosphere is going to lead to more scores because the players are going to be less nervous. So I think that's a big factor in it. I don't think the colour of the slitter really is changing it too much, Marie, to be honest.
Shane, I'd agree with you. So it's not that the crowd is worth you 2 or 3 points. It's actually how much it costs the opposition. I found that in racing, how the atmosphere could get to other lads. Dunica, you must have found it as well. So with no atmospheres, I think you've nailed it. It's less mistakes, less pressure. Everybody's finding it easier.
Yeah, like, I mean, we've all played in or been involved in Kings Ruby, I suppose, where, you know, maybe like say in a GA term, maybe like an opening of a field where there are an internal game in training where you're trying to pick your best team championship. There's no crowd there or not much crowd. You don't feel the same nervousness or the same adrenaline rush that you would get. You know, if you run out Croke Park Championship Day and there's 80,000 people there, like the buzz, it's just irreplaceable. And because there's no crowd there, I think the players are not as nervous on the ball. And I think because of that, maybe they don't feel the same pressure of Championship Hurling because it just doesn't feel like Championship Hurling. It's great to have it, and it is Championship in every way, but without that crowd, I think you're going to see more and more scores as Championship goes on.
Is the game changed a little bit, though, as well? If you look at the Limerick half forward line, 12 from play, and the full forward line with 7 from play, and, you know, it's not, you're not always looking at the half forward line to be banging over that amount of points, and that's the Limerick one.
Yeah, I just think Limerick are on a different level there at the moment anyway. They had 11 different scorers yesterday, and Clare only had 5 different scorers. But like, what Limerick have is, you know, they have these finishers. I don't like calling them subs. They have these finishers come in and finish off the job. And I was listening to Peter Mahoney saying that, you know, you're coming in, you have to be different and make a difference. And that's where Limerick, I think, are a little bit ahead of other panels, in that the guys that are coming in making a difference for them, the Seamus Flanagan's, Pat Ryan, David Reedy, Darrow Donovan, like Rich English is injured, Mike Casey's injured, like all those guys are coming in and they're probably as good as, if not better, than the guys they've replaced. And, you know, the way that Limerick play is that, okay, their half forward line comes very, very deep into their own side of the field, but it's the quality of ball that they can give into Galen and into Peter Casey. They have it down to a T, and it's just, they work so ferociously hard. I think they got 12 points just on the basis of turnovers yesterday, which is like they really have set the bar for work rate. And, you know, they've kind of sent a message out to the rest of the country there yesterday, like, you know, with their performance, albeit Marie, with all due respect to you, against the shadow of a Clare team. It's just looking at it during the week. I think there's only 4 guys that started the 2013 replay involved there yesterday. And you've lost no Colm Galvin this year, no Peter Duggan, no John Conlon.
Podge
Collins is gone. And those guys, Marie, haven't been replaced with the same quality of player as what's gone. And, you know, I just feel like when you're playing against Clare, you just have to kind of swallow your pride a small bit and you man mark Tony Kelly. Brendan Maher did it last year down in Innes. I could be saying correctly here. I think he kept him scores from play, might even score a point himself, Brendan, and Tip won the match easy. Like, so, I mean, like, teams have them. It's Patrick Horgan for Cork. It's maybe TJ for Kilkenny, Joe for Galway, and it's Tony Kelly for Clare. I mean, he scored 17 points yesterday. Imagine if he had an off day, Marie.
They didn't man mark him, though, which was quite interesting. They kind of just let him go a little bit. Obviously, now he did rack up a mass amount of score, and luckily enough, like, Limerick were well able to beat him and beat Clare. But, you know, their tactic paid off.
Oh, it did, and it was a great call out of the Clare management team. You know, to start him in corner forward, I'm sure it was, you know, a bit of a curveball for the Limerick defence, knowing, okay, like, do I stay here with him? Will I follow him out if he goes to midfield? What will we do? But I just think, you know, when you're playing against Clare, that regardless of where Tony Kelly is, you would pinpoint the guy to do a job on him, and no matter where he goes in the pitch, if he goes up the cornerback, I would say to that guy that his sole job for the team is to make sure Tony Kelly doesn't have a 17-point performance like he had yesterday. And I think if you do that against Clare, I think you're kind of halfway there to winning.
But Shane, the mind player, they got hammered. What about defending against Limerick? How are Tipperary going to curtail them? Because from the game I watched, it looked like Limerick could score from pretty much anywhere.
47 shots on goal. That's in the game. That's nearly a shot every 90 seconds.
Your name, Shane, it is.
Sorry, Shane. Go on.
She's upset. Okay.
I'm just excited.
I think what Limerick have is, right, they are not dependent on one guy. You take Keane Lynch, he maybe had a quieter day by his standards, yes, he scored 1 point, but they had 11 guys that scored yesterday, and they have a great, great panel. So, like, how are you going to battle against Limerick? I think Limerick bet a poor Clare team yesterday. And I think anybody who maybe would have known what was, knew about their hurling ruby or anything like that, would know that Clare team is not a very, very good Clare team in comparison to the Clare teams of years past, and especially the one that won the Ireland final. I think Limerick are coming up against a much sterner test next week. You take, for example, okay, Dan Morrissey's at fullback. He's not a natural fullback. Yesterday, was he really tested? He wasn't really tested. Let's be totally honest against the Clare full forward line. He's going to probably be marking Shamey Kelnan next week, which will be a much, much tougher test for him. Shamey is he's in phenomenal shape there at the moment. I know people say he's kind of coming to the autumn of his career maybe, but he is in serious shape. You could have maybe John McGrath beside him. You could have Jake Morris. You know, Bubbles might feature, and you know, De Bonner is back this year as well. Like, so I think that Limerick are facing a much sterner test. Will the match stand to them yesterday? Yeah, of course it will, because they'll be used to, you know, the, you know, not using dressing rooms and the travelling to the game and all those things. But I just think that Limerick are facing a much sterner test next week down in Cork. And I think, you know, there's very little talk about Tipperary, and I think it does kind of suit the group that there isn't much talk about them. Everybody nearly has Limerick lifting the Liam McCarthy Cup already, and you know that can be very, very dangerous as well. Lads,
I think you're being a small bit harsh on Clare. It was level at half time, 15 points apiece, so I think you might be, you know, Tipperary bias there, Shane, a little bit. Anyway, moving on, Dublin Laois, impressive from Dublin. They'll have their monkey off their back anyway, Shane, getting the revenge on Laois.
Yeah, and I think it's a tale of kind of two teams there, Marie, in that the personnel, right? You take Donal Burke. Everybody knows who Donal Burke is now, right? And he scored 116. He was phenomenal. This time last year, or in the tie last year, the match was going on in Port Laois, Donal Burke was over in Boston hurling there. So, like, there's a guy who has come in, and you know he's a very good hurler. He's great. He's given cup campaigns with DCU as well. But like he's a massive boost to Dublin. Whereas if you take the Laois side, like Chad Wire, who's so good from last year, wasn't there. John Lennon wasn't there. Jack Kelly, all-star nomination, when he came on just before half-time. Mark Kavanagh came on at half-time. Like, for the Laois of this world, they need all those guys playing and playing to the top level to try and push on. And, like, without, you know, those four guys who didn't start, who weren't involved, you know, it was always going to be very, very hard for them. And, you know, I think Dublin are in serious, serious shape as well. They have a very good bench. Eamon Dillon come on, scored 1-2. Mark Shudey came on. Liam Rush comes on. You know, and I was really, really impressed with Conor Burke playing that sweeper role, very comfortable on the ball. But I suppose they're, again, no more so than, for me, Limerick are meeting a sterner test next week. Dublin are meeting just a completely different animal in Kilkenny next week. You know, there'll be, I cannot foresee there being any sweepers, right? And I think you'll just have a 15-15 game. And I just think, I think Kilkenny are going to be the team to beat this year, to be honest, just with the time of the year that's coming and everything, and their ability to win. Just to win their own ball. They're just traditionally known as guys who just win their own ball and win a lot of dirty ball. And I think Kilkenny are going to turn them over next week anyway in Croke Park.
Okay, well, Shane, I have to say, even though you are from Tipperary, it is great to have Hurling back, and it's great to have you back chatting about it. And we will talk to you next week, no doubt.
Okay, lads, great talk to you.
Thanks, Shane. Talk to you soon. Now, moving on to Gaelic football, because it was a busy weekend in Gaelic football as well. Vinnie Corey joins us now. Vinnie, I think the story of the weekend really are Kerry Crown champions. It does feel like they are back and better than ever.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose the one of that there is there on Saturday, just the way the fixtures fell for Donegal, they ended up playing half a team. But I suppose, in fairness to Kerry now, they had the League One from their performances earlier in the year. And even as far back to last weekend, coming up to Inniskeen and beating Monaghan and really sending out a signal very early on. But they've seemed to have added more aspects to their game. And the most notable one is that power they have coming out of defence now. I mean, on Saturday, Gavin White was awesome. Tom O'Sullivan, Paul Murphy. Three boys, I don't know if Kerry maybe targeted them on the off-season and said, listen, you're the smallest, you just have to bulk up. But they look a lot stronger. You know, they're breaking tackles, they're driving forward, they're setting up scores, you know, hitting teams in the counter-attack, and then they have the quality up front. We know David Clifford, but, you know, Tony Brosnan has added as well. They kicked 6 points there on Saturday. So they look very threatening. When you think Paul Gainey to come back, Stephen O'Brien only came in for a while there on Saturday. So, listen, they look in very, very good shape.
Vinny, Kieran Whelan and Tomás O'Shea highlighted it on the Sunday game last night, but Kerry defensively, they're defending from the front backwards, and they both felt that would be a huge addition to Kerry. Would you agree?
Well, I suppose, listen, over the off-season, I think they might have alluded to it last night as well, that perhaps they saw the first two games, Mon and Donegal, and teams can get sucker punched very quick when you come back, because if you're coming up against a defensive system, it takes a bit of practice. It's not something you can just go in and play it on the day. You have to practice it and build up to it. So perhaps Kerry have been practicing coming up against that, and they've kind of set the terms and they've come out and played defensive themselves. But the more tools you have in the toolbox for later on in the year, the better. You know, if they're confident now they can play that game, if they have to play that game, they know they can play off the front foot, they know they can play the good football, the kicking game, but now they're honing in this other game and they seem to be pretty good at it.
Well, they have kept a clean sheet for the last two games, but it's going to be a completely different challenge when they play Cork, who are much more of an orthodox 15 style as well.
It is, and it depends, you know, who dictates the terms of it. Kerry could turn around against Cork and just say, listen, we're going to switch it up now, we're going to just blitz them in the first half. No, don't drop anybody back, keep all our forwards up there. They have that option now, and it could be unpredictable like that. So just because they've played like that this last two weekends, it doesn't mean to say that they're going to play 15 men behind the ball for every minute of every game for the rest of the year.
Tyrone Mayo was another really interesting one. Conor McKenna getting all the praise, and he will be on Game On tomorrow. He gave an absolutely exceptional performance, and the thing that stood out for me about him, Vinny, is that he's not doing what Tyrone have been doing for the last decade. He's much more of a free-spirited kind of player. He's given the dinky passes, he's kicking off the outside of his boot, and he doesn't really suit what Mickey Hart's been about.
No, it definitely comes across like that, and I think that has added serious energy to the team. You know, you think back to last week against Donegal, he won a penalty himself, he scored a goal, probably should have had another penalty, you know, had a big say in that match, and then this week again, you know, Tyrone scored 3-14, he had a direct say in 3-7, you know, he scored 2-2 himself, he set up the other goal, you know, 1 point, but also, you know, winning an option for kickouts, very strong in the air. Even when Mayo got it back to a point, Tyrone were kind of pinned in on their kick out. Morgan looks up, kicks it long to McKenna, he wins it clean. You know, so he's a serious option for them. And, you know, that sort of power, he seems to be the fulcrum of the attack now, you know, which is, you know, a serious achievement, because he's just come into the team, but he's playing like a leader, he's playing like he's been there 10 years. And you see even the likes of Matty Donnelly, he's getting energy from that. Matty Donnelly had a great game. Peter Hart kicked 3 points. Other players around that are starting to get energy from that now too. So he's been a massive addition to Tyrone, and even regardless of this year, looking forward to next year, we get Cathal Machane back. They have a lot of threats there.
And even with McKenna and Derek Canavan as well, who hasn't really been getting a huge amount of media coverage over the weekend, that Matty Donnelly and Peter Hart, the space they're going to get because of the attention that's going to be on McKenna and Canavan, will really strengthen Tyrone's chances.
Yeah, definitely so. I suppose he's put out his signal now. People know of Conor McKenna now, so people are going to be studying him. He's going to have to be marked. He's going to draw a few defenders, and as you say, that may free up some of the players that have been getting the attention up until this point. So the likes of the Matty Donnelly and the Peter Hart that would have been the marked men, now perhaps Conor McKenna needs that attention, and they might get freed up and be all the better for it.
Finney Mayo looked a different side against Galway last week. I mean, Aidan O'Shea and Mark Moran, they didn't quite have the same games, and their kickouts were pretty poor.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that tells the full story. They were playing against a really strong breeze in the first half there at the weekend. Now, they still scored 119 against Tyrone. That would be, you know, a pretty defensive team, and almost came back strong in the second half and won that game. I suppose the only thing about Mayo, I thought perhaps they were a wee bit naive the way they set up. They were against the gale force breeze, well, a very strong breeze anyway in the first half, but they played, you know, they pushed defenders out. There was one stage in the first half. Usually you tell a team, no, we're against a strong breeze, let's keep it tight in the first half, you know, don't let them in for goals, slow the game down, play it at our pace. But Mayo didn't do that, and there was one stage that really highlighted in the first half. Niall Morgan got the ball in his own 45, the Tyrone keeper. He looked up, he sprayed a brilliant ball into Peter Hart, you know, a 70-yard pass into Peter Hart. But when you looked up, there wasn't one Mayo defender back there. Tommy Conroy, who was corner forward for Mayo, was back cornerback marking Peter Hart, and Aidan O'Shea was back fullback, and all the other Mayo defenders were out the field. So I think that solidity that they needed in the first half, playing against a strong breeze, they didn't have it. You think even to Conor McKenna's great pass in to Darragh Canavan, it was 2-on-2 inside. So that they are a wee bit naive now. They came strong in the second half again, and, you know, Tommy Conroy, it's a brilliant find for them, kicked 1-3, but really attacked the Tyrone defence and almost pulled it off. So listen, I think over the balance over the last two games, Mayo have improved considerably compared to where they were at the start of the year, and they'll definitely take a lot of positives from it.
Finny, that breeze you mentioned is an interesting one as well, because when you look at over the weekend, the amount of scores that were kicked from far out the field, it's like teams know that during the winter they are going to be playing probably a half with a gale force breeze and need to be kicking those scores.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be a factor in team talks and stuff now. You're going to have to prepare for, listen, if we're playing against a strong breeze, what do we do? Or if we're playing with the breeze, what do we do? And I suppose back to Mayo's point, they didn't change their game for playing against the breeze. They played the way they always played. Maybe paid the price for it in the first half, conceding too much. But it's definitely going to be a factor going forward. And if you have players that are confident kicking, you think even to the Kerry game at the weekend, Clifford coming out past the 45, kicking a few scores with the breeze, no, easily going over the bar. You know, it's serious work, but teams getting adjusted to that and getting used to that, and playing with the breeze can be tricky at times too. You can think, geez, I'm going to score this, and you could waste an awful lot of possession. So it'll be something teams will be focusing on.
Dublin went to Salt Hill to play Galway and beat them by 2 goals in the end, but did Paddy Small do enough to force himself into a championship team?
Oh, he did very well, no, you have to say, and last week as well he looked lively. No, he kicked 4 points, kicked a few marks, was busy, was winning ball that went into him. He's definitely one player that has put their hand up for Dublin in the last two games. So I think definitely, listen, he's done himself no harm anyway.
Sean Bugler and Tom Lahiff didn't do themselves any harm either when they came off the bench. Mayo seemed to be, their confidence seemed to have knocked Galway's confidence quite a bit. I found they played quite negatively even when they had the breeze.
Yeah, that's probably going to happen when you concede such a big score the weekend before. It's something you're going to look at, and you're going to try and concede less. You're right, you know, they had a strong breeze in the first half. I think maybe perhaps they're only 2 points up at half time. Now, they did start the second half against the breeze really well, and I think they were 4 points up at one stage. But I think Dublin showed, even though Dublin made a lot of mistakes again this weekend, they showed how ruthless they can be just before the water break in the second half. And Galway showed that perhaps they're still not quite there yet. They were 4 points up, and 3 Galway mistakes, Dublin pounced on them and kicked 1-3 just before the water break and went in ahead. And they kind of held that lead for the rest of the game. 6 points, probably not a true reflection. I know Conor Cullen got a fortunate enough goal towards the end, but they held that 2 or 3 points after that. But they just blitzed Galway. You know, even for the Sean Bugler's goal, I think the ball broke. I think young Paul Kelly, I think, had it in his hands, dropped it. Dublin pounced and just ran at them over to Bugler, back of the net. So Dublin shows they're still ruthless if you make mistakes against them, and Galway probably made a few mistakes that they shouldn't be making when they were controlling the game.
And just finally, Monaghan, Meath, great for Meath to end their losing streak. But Monaghan, there are a lot of questions around them when you look over the last two games. Conor McManus 1-8 from play, and the rest of the team 1-9. So if he doesn't fire, then who gets the scores?
I think in fairness now Conor McManus was excellent. He really was very, very good now on Sunday, and really carried the fight to Meath. When other boys maybe weren't playing as well, he was the one man you could rely on and played really well. But I think throughout the year now, Monaghan have had a good spread of scores. They possibly had maybe 7 different scores there the weekend again. So they have been sharing the scoring burden, although Conor's a class act and got a big score. But you'd still be hoping to get more from Monaghan. Monaghan should have had that game finished early. They missed an awful lot of easy chances, and they could have really kind of coasted the rest of the game, but they made too many mistakes, let Meade back into it. In fairness to Meade, they missed their fair share of goal chances too, especially one straight after their own goal that really would have rocked Monaghan if it had went in. But I think, listen, perhaps overall the draw was the fair result in the end, but Monaghan would be a wee bit disappointed, but glad that they're still Division 1 and can just focus solely now in the Championship.
OK, well, Vinnie, Corey, there will be plenty to talk about over the next few months. Championship underway next weekend, and it is bound to be a busy one. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break, and then it's time for Premier League.
Game on 2F.
Mendy, Tielemans. There's the run of Under. He could take it on here. Vardy!
That was Jamie Vardy scoring for Leicester, and Stephen Kelly joins us on the line now. Stephen, there were some good results, some poor results. United and Chelsea was a bit of a dead rubber, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, not quite for either side. I suppose both of them would have liked to put a marker down and get a big result, but Mendy pulled off some great saves. The new goalkeeper for Chelsea really sprung to life at times and showed some great athleticism. couple of saves from Rashford, a decent one from Cavani as well, and Mata. So, you know, it looks like they've got onto a good one.
Yeah, Rashford had a couple of near misses, I suppose, but it was nice to see Cavani come on wearing that famous number 7 shirt, and he almost nicked one at the near post, didn't he?
Yeah, literally, first touch of the game, cross comes in from a corner, short corner comes in from it. He kind of does what he does best. He nicks in front of the defender. He's always very good at making good runs in the box, and that literally what he does. He goes in front of the defender, flicks around the corner, and almost in first touch in the bottom corner, but it was a bright start from him and shows what he's capable of, I think.
It's so tight, really, isn't it, when you think that Manchester United are 15th on the table, a game in hand, and if they win, they could move up to 5th. But it's that consistency, really, that every time Solskjaer seems to build up some goodwill, like the Champions League game at the weekend, then questions are asked very, very quickly afterwards.
Yeah, that's what this league does to you, isn't it? You have to be consistent to be within contention to win the Premier League. Your form week in, week out has to be on top form, and at the moment they're not doing, they're not producing that. You know, it was a big opportunity for them to get a result against Chelsea, who have signed a lot of players, a lot of quality on the pitch. I know defensively they can be poor at times, but Manchester United, they need to start taking some big scalps to show that they're in contention. But you know, you look at the table and there's only 6 points separating top to 16th. I think it's crazy.
Stephen, Marie had a bad weekend, but Liverpool did give her a lift. They beat Sheffield United 2-1.
Yeah, they did. Big performance for them. They put in the, you know, after everything has gone on, the loss of Van Dijk, Thiago out as well. There was a lot of talk during the week about injuries and red cards and stuff off the field. So for them to come out and get a win, Fabinho giving the penalty away wasn't great, and they could have given a second away. But you know, some of the performances offhand, I can just think of Alexander Arnold's free kick, fantastic effort. But then Salah's goal that was disallowed. The cross comes in, the touch and the finish. Like, if you're in training, that's one of the goals that the coach will say, I'm going to give it because you don't punish skill. It was just an amazing goal. And, you know, not to see that being allowed. He was offside, but, you know, at times they look very good.
Stephen, the only worry for Liverpool is their goal difference right now is scored 15, conceded 14.
Yeah, and, you know, that was with Van Dijk in the team until last week. Now that he's gone, you can't see that getting any better. It's a big question. They started off last season not great defensively. The first 3 or 4 games, I don't think they were firing. And then they just went on this run of going, being unbelievable. And Van Dijk was instrumental in that. So with him out, you know, it is going to be a huge loss. And they're going to have to try and deal. I think they're in a better position to deal with him out than they would have been before he came. But, you know, you can't underestimate how important he is to that side.
Well, Fabinho did seem to settle in the game, but just on Ruby's point there, it kind of feels like watching Liverpool back in the 80s, where you know you're going to concede goals and you just have to go out and score more. It's not like the new Liverpool that everyone has been getting used to. But very positive was Jota coming on and scoring the winner, and he seems to be making a habit of that as well. But where do you think he fits into that team?
It's hard to give him. Will he get a starting berth? I'm not too sure, because he's a front player. He's not a midfielder as such. He needs to play him in an attacking role, like a number 10 almost. And with the way they play, they don't often have a number 10. So you kind of think he's going to be limited to coming off the bench, because that front three take care of it, unless he maybe steps up in the Firmino role, which I just can't see him replacing him. But, you know, to be able to contribute like he has done so far, fantastic header from him. It was a great ball from Mane going down the line. Great bit of skill, lovely cross. But, you know, to be popping up in the box, getting in between two decent defenders and putting that away like he did, you know, that's going to be invaluable from going forward.
It surely will. You were on about Salah's skill earlier there, but what about Mikel Antonio's goal for West Ham against Man City, the bicycle kick? That was fairly acrobatic.
You're five days, Ruby.
Antonio, he's just so disappointed the team go off as well, because he caused the team so many problems. He's so quick, he's so strong, and he's capable of doing a piece of magic like that out of nothing. And he's really, really important to West Ham, so they're going to really see that. Yeah, hopefully it's not going to be a long injury, but when you see him come off, you kind of think, boy, he's gutted to lose him. But, you know, they've showed some resilience of late, and they've been putting in a good performance, and I think pressure has slightly been off them and their board over the last couple of weeks.
There is one game underway right now. Brighton are currently leading West Brom 1-0.
But Stephen, back to that West Ham City game. I mean, City had the most passes in the whole Premier League last weekend. They had 747 passes, but they still only managed to win, draw one all. I mean, do they need to convert more play into goals?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, 100%. They're fantastic at keeping the ball. They're fantastic of keeping the ball in the opponent's half. The problem they've had is conceding goals. They even with all the possession, they still give up teams opportunities and chances. And as they're not putting them away, they're not converting that possession into chances and then actually goals, they will get punished because they have a soft spot on the fence. They don't seem capable of really keeping many clean sheets. And, you know, for me, they need to be just scoring as many goals as possible. And on their day, City could put 5 or 6 past on teams because the amount of possession they have, and when all clicks together, they can be so hard to play against. But at the moment, it's just not going right for them.
Why is that not happening? Is it all the injuries? Like I was reading Pep Guardiola was saying, they're playing a game every 3 days at the moment.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of games, Champions League, Cup games, Premier League games, that they're squeezing a lot in. So that is going to take a toll. And with a short pre-season, and the season going on for so long last year, and not really stopping for the players, even though there's a big break for COVID, the players would have stayed fit. So it's kind of just a continuous season for them. So you kind of tell fatigue is going to stick in. But a lot of teams are in that position. And City have a huge squad. They've got a huge budget. They've brought in players. And, you know, they have in-depth quality in their squad. So they should be putting into the sword.
The only 100% record in the Premier League went last weekend, and that was with Aston Villa. And whilst they had plenty of possession early in the game, it turned into the Patrick Bamford show for Leeds.
It did, and I'm sure there's going to be screams about Bamford for Ireland again. And I think he's been linked with getting a cap for England now because he's in form. But you know, one of his goals, where he's in the box, he takes a couple of really neat touches and turns and puts in the top corner. It was a fantastic finish, and I suppose a player who's just in fantastic form. He had so many doubters going into the season. People just said he wouldn't last, he wouldn't play, he was only going to get the first few games. But he really understands Bielsa, the way he plays, the way he wants, what he wants from a striker. And he's just in great, probably the form of his life at the moment. But, you know, he's technically a very good player as well. So, you know, for him, confidence is high, and you can see that continuing for a while.
On that technical ability, I mean, his third goal, I mean, he barely had any backlift with his foot to get it out from where it was. It was incredible to watch.
Yeah, like I said, it was beautiful. It was really, really tight space. He just kind of touches it, but the ball wasn't far enough out, like you said, to get any back lift. And he just kind of lifts it into that far corner. Keeper, no chance. But the technical ability and the vision to be able to, and the finesse then to finish it off, it was a wonderful finish. And I think he really has turned a lot ahead this season. Like I said, people did write him off, and maybe there was a lot of, he wanted to prove people wrong, he wanted to show he could do it at this level, and he really is doing that.
A few people have texted in saying that he should get the call-up for Ireland, but unfortunately, earlier this month, he was speaking to the Daily Mail, and he said, we've got a very good group of English strikers, so it'll be good competition. Let's see if I can put my name in the frame. So I don't think that's going to happen. Before we finish up, Shamrock Rovers were crowned league champions at the weekend. They didn't win a game to be crowned because Bowes lost to Finn Harps, but they will be crowned on Wednesday night when they take on Derry.
Yeah, no, great for them. It's been a while and they've done extremely well, and the Dundalk have kind of been really at the forefront for the last few seasons, and they've been pushing with the cup win last year. You know, you could see they're building on something. A lot of good players, Jack Byrne, you know, is the one that springs to mind for most people, but they have some depth of the squad, and you kind of feel that this was coming. And you know, it's what they wanted. Even on the back of the cup win last year, this season was the league they were going for, and you know, they implemented it really well. They played some great football throughout the season.
Okay, well, we will be covering that over the next couple of days. Stephen Kelly, thanks so much for joining us. That is all we have time for this evening. We'll be back tomorrow with Barry Geraghty talking about his new book and Tyrone's Conor McKenna.